Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, last weekend was the running of the Daytona 500, and we have those results for you. This weekend, NASCAR is in Atlanta, and they're going to be coming to Phoenix on the 7th and the 8th, along with the IndyCars. We'll also talk about an IndyCar test that was out at Phoenix this week. An interesting story about Simona De Silvestro, an IndyCar driver who is in the Olympics, driving a bobsled. Of course, we'll talk about what's going on with gas prices, and it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Pages of Racer Magazine and Racer.com, the headline reads, Daytona delivers the most meaningful moments with the Reddick victory. Well, Sunday was the best of what Daytona had to offer. It delivered a race winner in Tyler Reddick, a man who spent much of 2025 as committed to his job as he could, while his infant son, Rookie, battled with significant health issues. Now, for the longest time, it was a battle the public never knew about, not until the season wound down, when things became more serious. Then it was revealed that Rookie, who was born in May of last year, had to undergo surgery for a tumor in his chest. Now, the surgery took place in October, and Rookie didn't come home from the hospital until a week before the end of the season. And the Reddick family has tried to get back to some semblance of normalcy since then. Now, along with Reddick came winning co-owners Denny Hamlin and Michael Jordan. Hamlin came into the season as an emotional championship defeat, with an emotional championship defeat, and grieving the loss of his father, Dennis, in a house fire in December. Jordan, meanwhile, a North Carolinian, was living his dream as being involved with the sport he watched as a child. The victors, of course, hail from 2311 Racing, one of the teams that had dominated not just the NASCAR headlines, but the mainstream media going back to October of 2024 after they filed a lawsuit, an antitrust lawsuit, against NASCAR. That lawsuit was settled on December 11th. Now, the first race of the season, the sport's biggest race, and their winners. They capped off a winner in which Front Row Motorsports, who was also involved with that lawsuit, won Friday night in the Craftsman Truck Series, and Richard Childress Racing, the man who owned the team, was insulted by former NASCAR Commissioner Steve Phelps via a text message that was revealed during the trial, won the Saturday night race with the O'Reilly Auto Parts. Well, because of this, it was just bound to happen, right? All we do is win, cracked Denny Hamlin, the media center, as the winning car owner's representative. In that sense, much is likely to be made about the fact that NASCAR's biggest adversity is now its biggest winner. Well, if it doesn't anything else, it makes the story just a little bit funny. The sport is not unfamiliar with things working out the way they're supposed to. It's the same as two drivers who disagree about being in the same truck during the pre-race, but they're in different trucks next week or parked next to each other in the garage. Now, wouldn't be a shame. But it would be a shame to turn the triumph of Sunday just into another story about 2311 and racing and NASCAR. Daytona, when it's at its best, delivers moments in time for those who need it the most. A winner, or a story that emerges that will live on for decades as the magic of the race, as it then shines through in full force. And what happened with Reddick and company is that. Reddick celebrated what is by far the biggest crowning achievement in his Cup career. A race he admitted he never knew that he would win. One that came with his family, Alex, Rookie, and Bo, all there, all happy and healthy. The emotion I shared with my wife and my sons and reflecting on personal things that we've gone through, the struggles, the hard times, the uncertainty of knowing what was going on with Rookie, Reddick said. Is Rookie going to be okay? What's going to be there? What's going to be there for us? So far, this moment, this race, everything we went through at the tail end of last year, during the offseason, and for us to get back on our own place, all has its place. Then we look at the other side with Denny and Michael and my team. For my team, we worked really hard on these things in the offseason to improve, to come out of the gate strong. And well, we did. We won the first points-paying race. And with Denny and Michael, the two have believed in me for years. They wanted me to be a part of 2311. So the mix is coming through on the promises that I made for them and they made for me. They believed in me a lot, and I wanted to be there for them. I wanted to deliver and be a part of 2311 racing really bad, and it all worked out. These type of moments where I'm supposed to deliver for them, it's nice to be able to do that. Is it kismet, coincidence, or is it just fitting? There'll be so many ways to look back on who won the 68th running of the Daytona 500. In this case, perhaps the simplest answer is correct. Everything happens for a reason, and that's what Daytona is all about. NASCAR is heading off to Atlanta, as they are there right now, and the NASCAR Cup race will begin. Coverage will begin at noon today on Fox 10. If you want to catch that. But we've got some really good news about the support races. The headline reads: Busch takes record ninth truck win at Echo Park Speedway. Well, Kyle Busch took his third consecutive and his record ninth win of his career in the Craftsman Truck Series at Echo Park Speedway on Saturday afternoon, capping a dramatic push into the checkered flag to collect his record 68th victory in the NASCAR Series. In the closing laps, Busch exchanged leads with veteran Stuart Friesen as a flashback from the 2025 race on the 1.5-mile High Bank Atlanta Speedway. Ultimately, Busch's number 7 Spire Motorsports Chevrolet was able to get the best of the duel, and benefiting from a timely push from his teammate Carson Hocevar to reclaim the lead for good. The race went into adverse conditions rule that ended a little early because of weather, and only 10 laps short of the original 135 race lap distance. So Kyle Busch, who has had his struggles in the Cup Series, comes to Atlanta and wins the truck race. He's not a normal truck race driver, but he is able to drive X amount of races per year in that series. So congratulations, Kyle Busch, for getting back into victory lane with the folks at Spire Motorsports. And we're going to stay in Atlanta with NASCAR, and the headline reads, Creed secures incredible first O'Reilly Auto Parts victory in Atlanta. Incredible is exactly how Sheldon Creed described his first career victory in the NASCAR O'Reilly Parts Series. It's likely to be someone who watched the Bennett Transportation and Logistics 250 would describe the dramatic run to the checkered flag on Saturday night. While racing hard for the win, the Chevrolets of 5-time Atlanta race winner Austin Hill and NASCAR Cup full-time series driver Ross Chastain collided while running first and second, clearing the way for the 28-year-old Californian Creed to emerge from his third-place position and, taking advantage of the opportunity, raced his factory Haas team Chevrolet cleanly through the incident and came out of the final turn for his first career trophy in the series, setting an incredible record with 15 runner-up finishes in this series. Incredible, a smiling Creed said after accepting his first series checkered flag from the flagman after the race. It worked out. Finally, a winner. Well, obviously, we've had lots of good runs, but never finished up, never won, hosting the trophy in victory lane. His voice a little softer after screaming from emotion on his cool-down lap. To finally do that, it was looking like it was going to be another second place coming off of turn two, but this night, it finally worked out for me. Well, I'm very excited for young Creed. He's raced so hard, and he's been a runner-up 15 different times, and finally gets his first victory in Atlanta. This is CBS News Online. Consumer Reports unveils its top 10 vehicles for 2026. Let's see which cars made the list. Well, Consumer Reports' verdict on the top cars of 2026 is in, and brings us some welcome news for car shoppers looking to cut down on their fuel use while staying safe on the road. This year's mix has top cars, trucks, and SUVs, including several models that come in below the average of the $50,000 starting price for many vehicles these days. Consumer Reports reports purchases and tests for about 50 vehicles every year, assessing the cars based off their performance in dozens of road tests, as well as government and insurance and industry crash tests. The organization also considers reliability and consumer satisfaction and pulls their scores from that data. Most cars claim to have high rankings and repeated from last year, with the exception of 3 new models that managed to infiltrate the top 10. Let's talk about those vehicles. The best small car? No surprise here, the Honda Civic. The Honda Civic is long lauded for its value, and a new entrant in the Consumer Reports top 10 this year. The car is based off the fact that it's the most affordable vehicle on the list, with a base price of $24,695. Of the car's three choices, the Consumer Reports said that the hybrid version is the best. It offers the most perks with the gas-powered model. In addition, has the best fuel efficiency at 44 miles per gallon, superior acceleration from 0 to 60 in 7.5 seconds. Now, the hybrid model is a little quieter and a little more powerful than the gas model itself. The best midsize car? No surprise, Toyota Camry. The Toyota Camry is now sold exclusively as a hybrid. Also snatched one of the top spots on the list, the practical and interior space, user-friendly controls. This vehicle has a base price of $29,010. It handles well, it rides, and looks good, so it's a well-rounded sedan. The downside, the low placement of the front and rear seats might make them a challenge for access. The best subcompact SUV is the Subaru Crosstrek. With a base price of $26,995, the Subaru Crosstrek comes in as both a gas and a hybrid powered versions. Consumer Reports say that the vehicle offers superior handling and off-road pavement excursions. Also praised the Crosstrek and the Subaru Forester for their reliability and visibility. They also shine really well in their reliability and their fuel efficiency. Next, well, as we just were talking about, the best compact SUV, the Subaru Forester. Another Subaru on this year's top 10 list is the Forester, which comes in at $29,995 starting price. Subaru introduced a hybrid version of this car last year, which they say gets 40% better fuel economy than the non-hybrid version. Consumer Point also points out the excellent visibility, comfort, and interior space in this vehicle. Best midsize SUV, the Toyota Grand Highlander. Consumer Reports say that the Toyota Grand Highlander is a good pick when it comes to three-row seat SUVs, a roomy interior, 18-inch wheels mix for a smooth, comfortable ride. The vehicle gets an average of 35 miles per gallon and has a base price of $41,660. There are three rows of seats in this SUV, and that's one spacious vehicle with a fuel-efficient hybrid option, which is pretty rare. The best luxury compact SUV, well, that's going to be the Lexus NX. It got high marks for its high-quality interior, comfort, and Consumer Reports praise it. It's especially plush and supportive front seats. The vehicle has a base price of $44,175 and is available as a fully gas-powered car, a regular hybrid, or a plug-in hybrid. The hybrid versions of the Lexus NX combine a powerful 304 horsepower engine for efficiency and can travel 37 miles solely on electricity. Well, the best small pickup truck, a little surprise for me here, the Ford Maverick. Starting price of $28,145, the Ford Maverick caught the Consumer Reports' attention for its affordability. It comes in both hybrid and gas-powered models, achieving 37 and 23 respectively, and can tow up to 4,000 pounds, according to the Ford website. With a smaller frame, the truck is more nimble. If you're a city type in settings and you need a truck, this is something that's a little bit more manageable. Well, the best midsize luxury SUV is the BMW X5. Consumer Reports described the BMW X5 as one of the best luxury cars it's ever tested, praising its supportive seats, well-fashioned interior, and the car comes in both gas only and a hybrid version with a range of electricity only at 39 miles. Now, with a lot of luxury brands, on average, we don't see the reliability, but BMW has bucked that trend. The X5 is included. Beyond reliability, it's just a really compelling luxury SUV. This is the most expensive vehicle on the list, and it starts at $67,060. Well, the best electric vehicle? It's the Tesla Model Y. Consumer Reports ranks the Tesla Model Y, which was launched back in 2020, as the best electric vehicle. The car's reliability is increased with time and integrated within the automaker's supercharge network, which still has yet to be topped. The base price of this vehicle is $39,990. Now, some downsides, the controls on the inside can be a little bit distracting. Consumer Reports also recommends against using the self-driving feature that Tesla advertises. Tesla last week decided to wind down productions of the older models, the S and the X, according to the Associated Press. So both models saw a decline in sales last year, according to Kelley Blue Book. The best full-size pickup truck, no surprise here, the Ford F-150. With a starting price of $37,290, both a gas-powered and a hybrid version, the vehicle stands out in the truck category for its reliability. The reliability has slowly crept up over time, and it's nice to be able to point people toward a truck that's going to serve them pretty well. Some of the bells and whistles Consumer Reports liked was the blind spot monitor and driving aids that simplify backing up and hooking up a trailer. So those are all the top vehicles that Consumer Reports tests. I was a little surprised about the small pickup truck, because that's kind of been the place where the Toyota Tacoma has dominated. But it's not surprising, with Ford making the F-150, that the Maverick pickup truck is the best small to mid-size pickup truck available today. This week, I was able to head out to Phoenix Raceway and catch some of the testing that was going on for the Indy cars. And from our friends at Racer Magazine and Marshall Pruitt, the headline reads, Rossi ends Phoenix test on top. Well, it was Team Penske's David Malukas on Tuesday, and it was Ed Carpenter's Alex Rossi on Wednesday for the top speeds, as Rossi once again Wednesday afternoon, as the Team Chevy drivers took the three fastest spots across the two-day Unser IndyCar Open Test at Phoenix. Rossi pushed his number 20 ECR Chevy to the top spot in the morning at 174 miles an hour, and improving in the windy and heavy overcast settings that were frequently interrupted by rain. Well, we did everything we wanted to, and obviously it was a good day for us. Christian is also testing strong. There was nothing more we could ask for. Excuse me. The 2016 Indianapolis 500 winner was shadowed by his young teammate Rasmussen in the number 21 Chevy at a speed of 173.9 miles an hour. Chip Ganassi Racing's Alex Palou was first for Honda, and Alex Andretti Global's Will Power, number 26, was in fourth position in his Honda. And it's interesting that Will Power is coming over from Penske Racing, where he has raced for the last 15 years. So I'm excited for him to be in a new team, and it was really great. We had fun, went out and had some lunch at the halfway point, came back, and it was raining, and we thought, you know what, no reason to sit in the rain to watch cars test, so we ended our session early. But we had a great day and a great afternoon, morning, out at Phoenix Raceway earlier this week. Well, let's go back to Phoenix Raceway. Coming up in, less than 2 weeks, the IndyCars and NASCAR will be pulling into Phoenix Raceway, and we've got friends coming in from Indiana, and we're very excited about this event. So the festivities actually start on Thursday. We're going to be out there on Friday. Thursday is the ARCA Menards Series event, so if you want to go out and check that out, that is going to be on Thursday evening, 4 o'clock, so late afternoon. And that's the General Tire 150. And for everything on this, if you want some more information, you can go to phoenixraceway.com for more details. Friday is going to be a great day, because you're going to be able to see IndyCars practice and qualify, as well as practice and qualify for the O'Reilly Auto Parts Series. So that'll be a blast. And that's a general admission ticket that's really inexpensive. On Saturday, two races, you're going to be able to see the O'Reilly Auto Parts Series race in the late afternoon. And you're also going to be able to see the IndyCars run, and that's going to be at 1 o'clock. And they'll also be qualifying for the Cup Series race, which is the following day. So that's kind of a cool combo, to be able to see IndyCars and O'Reilly Auto Parts race, and also qualifications for the Cup Series. And then on Sunday, March 8th, the Cup Boys will be taking to the track, and that race will be at 12:30 our local time. So if you haven't been out to Phoenix Raceway, I recommend it. The track is beautiful, great, great facilities. And once again, if you want some more information, go to phoenixraceway.com. Well, in the category of weird and unusual, and this is definitely more unusual than weird, and this is from Reuters, it says, from Indy 500 to the Olympics via F1 and Formula E, Silvestro chases speed on a sled. Well, Simona De Silvestro has raced in the Indianapolis 500 six times. She's tested a Formula One car. She was the first woman to score points in the all-electric Formula E series, but now she's found new thrills steering the sled of a bobsled down the icy tracks at the Olympics. Although the Swiss-Italian has long listed motorsports achieving to her name, including the Indy 500 Rookie of the Year in 2010, a stint in the Australian V8 supercars, representing Italy in a mono bobsled and the two-woman bobsled in the games this year is a dream come true. Well, I've always felt so inspired by athletes. To think that I'm an Olympian is very special. And the things I've been able to do in my career, according to the 37-year-old Swiss-born racer who finished 23rd in Monday's mono bobsled, just to be here is incredible. Well, racing is not just an Olympic sport, so I kind of went through this in my sports and figured bobsled is maybe going to be the closest thing that I've ever been able to achieve in, as a dream of being in the Olympics. And my journey started 3 years ago. Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy ride so far. Now, Simona is not the first racing driver to compete in the Olympic bobsled. The Spanish driver and Formula One racer Alfonso de Portugal did in the Olympics in 1956, but she is the first female to be able to do both. I'm used to having 650 horsepower with me, and all of a sudden, it's just me. So I think it's the biggest challenge I've had to face. If you look at the start, I'm just missing a little bit too much to be perfect after that run. It's very difficult to make up time, unfortunately. In comparison to the Indianapolis 500 at the Brickyard each May, there's 300,000 spectators in the stand. And it might not be immediately evident that on a freezing track in February with the scattered fans around a track snaking around the facility, the pressure of being an Olympic athlete and qualifying at the Indianapolis 500 is not that dissimilar. In Indianapolis, you have to qualify the car, so you have that tension of the whole of the race, and this I have the whole nation looking at me and wanting to qualify the sled. It was pretty nerve-wracking and pretty similar. Just putting all the pieces together on a run and the atmosphere, the Olympics and the history behind it with the five rings, you know, it's so cool. I pinch myself the fact that I'm really here. Sometimes fans come up to me and have pictures of me in cars and I'm thinking, my God, I've driven all those things. But the one thing that's still missing is driving at Le Mans. So I definitely want to get that on the list. So Simona, from Indy to the Olympics. We're very proud of our IndyCar driver and the fact that she is running in this year's Olympics. Gas prices with the folks over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $2.93. Here in Arizona, it's $3.21. Over in New Mexico, $2.56. Colorado, $2.68. Utah, $2.76. California, $4.61. And how about this? Oklahoma, $2.34. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Arizona. Well, gas prices are creeping up, folks. Right now, the least expensive gas is still, with our friends down in Tucson, $2.44. At one Costco, $2.45. At another, Sam's Club at $2.45. The Eloy Chevron station at $2.48. So right now, cheap gas is still down in southern Arizona. Well, there's still some gas under $3 a gallon, but it's a little more difficult to find. The Sahara Station on 7th Avenue and Southern, $2.73. The Marathon Station on West Apache Trail at $2.89. The Sam's Club on North Gilbert Road at $2.90. The Arco Station on Grand Avenue, 103rd and Grand, is at $2.91. And the Arco Station on West Thunderbird at 83rd Avenue is at $2.93. We've come to that part of the show, folks. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, what good are idiot's lights on the dashboard anyway? I've had batteries die with no warning. Now I've discovered that my car was practically out of oil. seems like the last oil change, the filter wasn't fully tightened. But the oil light never came on. So I thought the purpose of these lights was to warn you before you had a problem. Now it seems like they only come on after the fact. What's the point? And that's from Mike. Well, I guess we can change the name to, boy, you really are an idiot light. No, they're supposed to alert you to a problem when there's still a chance to prevent it from getting worse. So why did your oil light not come on? Well, there's several possible explanations. One of those is the light itself is not working. Most people don't know that these so-called idiot lights all run a self-test when you turn the key on to the start position or when you first start the car. So if the circuits are all working and the bulbs are all good, you should see every light come on briefly when you start the car. If a light fails to display, it's not going to come on when you need it. So that's when you need to get the light fixed. Now, another possibility with this situation is the oil level wasn't low enough to trigger a pressure warning. The oil light reflects the oil pressure rather than the oil level. Now, some cars do have a separate oil level light. So let's say your car holds 5 quarts of oil, and you're a little over a quart low. You would see no oil on the dipstick because it would not come up to the fill mark. But you still could have 4 quarts of oil, and the oil pressure could be okay. Now, as far as the battery, well, it's really hard to tell when a battery is going to die. If the output of the charging system is adequate, that light will remain off. That just tells you that the battery is being adequately charged. When the battery dies, that's because it can no longer hold a charge, and that's a hard thing to measure. That's why I always recommend replacing batteries every 5 years or so you don't get stranded. They typically don't last much longer than that, in my experience. Now, if your charging system is having issues, well, you may see the battery light come on. That means your alternator is failing, and that's fair warning to get it fixed because it's no longer charging your battery, because guess what? You're gonna get stuck. So it's not always the lights, Mike. It also could be that we, the idiots who interpret them, are also at fault. That's pretty stern warning with the fact that don't always depend on the lights on your dashboard. And also understand which lights do what, and if you don't see them light up, it could be a situation where you have a light failing and then you're never going to be able to see if there's a problem. Also, check your oil pressure, check your oil levels, and also check your tire pressure levels as well. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday. And you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.